We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
We're talking wide receiver projections for Terry McLaurin and Rashad Bateman on Roto-Viz Radio.
What's up, Roto-Viz?
Welcome into the Roto-Viz Fantasy Football Show. I'm Dave Cabin alongside Curtis Patrick. We are two of the owners at Roto-Viz. We will be talking through some wide receiver projections tonight. I was present while Curtis was doing a little bit of research here on Terry McLaurin, and he actually started laughing. So I am very interested to see what this stat attack would be. But Curtis, how are you doing, my friend?
Okay, we got to get right into this FFPC stat attack. One of my highest exposure players in best ball to this point in 2022 is Terry McLaurin. So that's one reason I queued him up for you in today's episode. Dave, I want to see what your pass-through projection machine shows for him this year. But in his three seasons, he's caught passes from eight different passers. And three seasons, this poor freaking guy. So, you know, Carson Wentz actually is an upgrade on anything that he's had. And I think, you know, the lack of certainty in Washington has depressed McLaurin from what actually could be an improved situation for him this season, both in terms of the quarterback quality and also maybe a slight lift in the surrounding talent. So that's why my curiosity is there. In underdog, I'm 26% exposed to McLaurin, so I'm in pretty heavy here in Best Ball Mania. But Dave, I want to see how many of these eight passers you can name. I'm going to set the over under at 4.5. You think you can get more, or you can over under 4.5?
I don't know if I can get over, so I'm gonna say I'm probably gonna end up under.
I'm taking the under. I think you'll struggle to get the fifth guy. So let's see what you got.
All right. Colt McCoy.
Yes. Seven targets from Colt McCoy. Yeah. that's crazy that's the first one you pull out.
Tyler Heinicke.
Yes, Taylor Heinicke is actually he's had more targets. 124 targets from Heinicke. That's actually his most frequent battery mate there.
Yeah. Is Dwayne Haskins in there?
He is. 98 targets from his former Ohio State teammate as well.
Yep.
That's so three.
There's one that should be fairly obvious, I feel like.
No one else that you've mentioned has targeted him more than 52 times. So,
all right. I'm just going to name some scrubs that might have been hanging around. There was Blaine Gabbert there at any point in that mess. I really should get this next one. Case Keenum, I don't think was.
Yeah, Case Keenum. I'll give it to you.
There it is.
Not confident, but I will give you the name.
Right.
41 target. Yeah, 41 targets from Case Keenum. That gets you to four. If you get a fifth, I'll be pretty impressed, man.
Washington quarterbacks.
Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue.
Okay, this guy, I'll start giving you some hints here. Right. This is the obvious one that I expected you maybe to have gotten. This guy had a horrific lower leg injury.
Oh, Alex almost, Smith. Yes. I should have known. That's the one that I knew was obvious and I couldn't place. All right.
I was really excited that you got Colt McCoy. When you got Colt McCoy, I actually was worried that I was going to be wrong on the under.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the other guys, Kyle Allen, 31 targets. Mm-hmm. Garrett Gilbert, 4 targets. And the eighth guy is not even, well, he actually was a quarterback in college, but he's no longer a quarterback in the NFL.
Logan Thomas.
Yes, Logan Thomas. One target from Logan Thomas for a cumulative AYA of 28.00. That had to have been a touchdown. Yes. I'm sure it was a very exciting play. So anyway, the point here being that, you know, Terry McLaurin has definitely not had a chance to settle in with anyone. I would argue maybe that is even a replacement level talent at the quarterback position. And while Carson Wentz doesn't resemble his first couple seasons in Philly, at least lately, he was a pretty good downfield passer in Indianapolis last season. And, you know, that does, you know, sync up well with where McLaurin tends to have his most success on the field. So why don't you talk me through a little bit of what went into McLaurin's projection? You know, where do you have him figuring out? And I'll see if all of this investment that I've made is justified.
Yeah. So I think the first thing I'll say here is that if you're doing a projection for McLaurin, you can't expect that you're going to see him getting solidly into that wide receiver two type of range. I think that if you're drafting him, it's because you are expecting or hoping that you can get this step forward with Wentz, who I agree probably is the best quarterback that he's played with, even this iteration of Wentz. Historically, McLaurin has been by and large the team's main target. But first thing that we'll do is we'll look at the play volume. Now, last year they had 535 passing attempts. I think that offensive coordinator Scott Turner would like them to build upon that. This year, I'm projecting around 550 passing attempts. So a little bit of an increase there. Nothing too wild. McLaurin should probably get somewhere around 24-25% target share. As a rookie, he was at a target share of 23, has had 25% the last two seasons. I set things at 24 just to capture a little bit of the uncertainty that you're going to have with the other wide receivers in this offense. I think that you're still going to see Antonio Gibson getting to nearly double digits. McKissick should be over 10% pretty easily. So that's a pretty high volume going to running backs. I have Dotson actually coming in around 17% as the wide receiver too. But I think that regardless of how you slice things up, we'll look at a high-end scenario. But McLaurin should have around 13 yards per reception. On his career, he's been at 12.8 or higher every season, averaging around 13.5. I held it at 13. Honestly, that half a yard difference won't really push the needle on 77 receptions, as I do think that he's had a pretty low catch percentage year over year in this pairing with Wentz. I'm capturing some of that uncertainty, but I do have him getting his highest receiving touchdown percentage since his rookie year, coming in with a receiving touchdown percentage of around 7%, which would get him to 6 touchdowns, Curtis. When you put all of that together, that produces a line for McLaurin of just over 1,000 yards. Sorry, I misspoke. I have him with 82 receptions this year, 6 receiving touchdowns. Now, I think that to me feels like, you know, a pretty average type of scenario. Would you agree? And then we'll see if we want to try to adjust it up or down, which direction you're interested in.
Sure. So you went 82 receptions and 6 receiving touchdowns.
Yep.
Okay. So we're, and then over 1,000 yards. So, I mean, he's, what is he, like 200, 220 PPR, something like that.
Yeah. So the point total, that puts him at wide receiver 29 with 225 PPR points. 225.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Why don't we talk through maybe some of the ranges, and then I'll see if I can move you using some of the advanced stats and maybe the range of outcomes. Not that I want to influence your projections, because I do not want to wreck the process, but actually at wide receiver 29, I think that to me feels like the floor for a player like this, more than the ceiling. Certainly hope that I'm correct on that with as much as I've invested here.
Yeah. So let's try this. Let's say that we could get him up to 26%. Okay. And then let's say that he has a good connection with Wentz and we'll give him a catch percentage of 64, moving him up off of the 62. I may have misspoken, said I had him at 59. I was looking at the wrong section. And then yards per reception, let's say it's 13.5. I think that, is probably the spot that it has the least impact here. So we'll just give a slight increase. And then receiving touchdown percentage, what if we can get that up to 8%? Well, I'll tell you what, Curtis, we're going to go 9%, okay? This shifts his line to now 92 receptions, 1,242 yards, and 8 receiving touchdowns. If that were to happen, McLaurin takes a big jump up and moves into what would be the wide receiver 14 with 264 points.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's, yeah. To me, I think if I was going to set the range, that actually feels great. I think wide receiver 29 to wide receiver 14, that actually does feel like the range for me. But I don't know that he's necessarily being drafted as, a borderline, a guy who has borderline wide receiver one upside. Now, what is a low end projection look like? Because maybe I'm not really taking that into account enough here.
I would say that a low end projection is probably not so much driven by a big shift in market share. So we'll put him at 23. It's probably more in a lack of touchdown scoring. Because if I change, as I mentioned, the tweaks to the yardage won't really move things that much. If we put him on 12 yards per reception, a catch percentage of 61, which is down a little bit versus where I would have had him, but nothing crazy. And then a receiving touchdown percentage, if that were to drop down to 5%, for example, and he now ends up with 77 receptions, 924 yards, and 4 receiving touchdowns, we're going to see him coming in. I have to go find him here quickly as the wide receiver 39.
Yeah, I would be just flabbergasted to see that scenario occur. I mean, he's been at 130 plus targets in each of the last two seasons. He's been between 77 and 87 receptions, over 1,000 yards in both those seasons, and 5 receiving touchdowns in 2021, 4 in 2020. And again, doing that with multiple offensive coordinators and, nearly an entire lineup's worth of quarterbacks. So to me, when you also consider your notes on Scott Turner maybe wanting to expand the passing attack this season, it's kind of hard for me to see the floor going below what we've already seen in the past two seasons. So that's kind of been my personal argument for selecting where he's been going on Underdog in particular, to shine the light on that there. His wide receiver ADP is currently positionally wide receiver 21, is going at the 4-5 turn typically in the late fourth most often. So that's where you're really, you're getting McLaurin. He does have the week 14 bye late in the year. I think, maybe one reason that he's sitting there in the fourth round rather than the early fourth or even the late third is also, the contract dispute that's still kind of hanging out there.
Right.
But assuming that he's there on day one, and has a chance to build that rapport, with Wentz starting in week one, to me, this kind of feels like the ceiling year for McLaurin if we're going to get one.
Right.
He could be a guy that's already, maxed out, and it just doesn't really matter. The counter to the argument is that he just is who he is, regardless who's throwing the ball.
So, I will say this. If you look at the range of outcomes tool, it actually ends up with a pretty similar outlook for McLaurin, with the historical distribution score, which is where it's looking. So the range of outcomes tool is looking at the distribution. And then I have a scoring system, with the distribution being his matching players and the point totals that they scored. It puts him, you know, in that middle range of being a wide receiver three. But the largest portion of his distribution lies between 10 and 15 points per game, which is, I think, where that projection would have him. He does, though, have, this might help you out a little bit, he does have 7 matches that managed to get to around 17 points per game. So I think that if we're going to see that ceiling performance for him, that's probably where it's going to come. I'm not exactly sure off the top of my head where I think that those 17 points would put him this year, but I guess I would agree that if there is this step forward and he has the best year of his career with Wentz, there's definitely a decent chance that he outplays substantially where he's currently being selected. I personally, though, think that he's going to finish closer to where that projection and that large distribution of his range of outcomes fall.
Okay, so Dave says Terry McLaurin. Dave's projections say,
yep,
Terry McLaurin being overdrafted at wide receiver 21, he gives 2 thumbs down to my high exposure to McLaurin. Well, I'm definitely, that's fine. It's fine.
Let me caveat.
You don't have to like every move I make. No, it's I'm okay. Not saying that, but we agree all the time.
I need to put this out. So again, though, the projection process does not equate to my rankings. In my rankings, I would have him situated closer to wide receiver 21 of his ADP than my projections would. Because when I'm going through this process, I'm not capturing that upside that I think could be there. And I agree. I think that there's not as much downside with him this year of falling far away from his ADP versus the upside of him far outpacing it. That makes sense?
Yeah, I mean, it does. We've talked about the fact that, you know, projection and rankings do have some separation. I think situationally and contextually, I just kind of see this a lot like the Colts offensive situation last season, except without a running back that you would want to lean on, like Jonathan Taylor.
Yep.
So, you know, Wentz is going into a situation where, you know, the running game isn't as strong as what it was in Indianapolis. The team probably will have to throw the ball a little bit more, being in a division with other explosive offenses, which is another departure from what he was in the AFC South last season. Now he has to face Dallas twice. He has to face Philly twice. And he has Brian Daboll to catch up with in New York. So much different division and different surrounding cast. He really only had Michael Pittman last season. And, you know, Pittman obviously burst onto the scene as a result of that situation. I think McLaurin is a superior talent to Pittman. And we saw from Pittman, you know, 88 receptions, 1,082 yards and 6 touchdowns and an offense that only threw the ball 502 times. And you're projecting about 10% above that. So those are kind of some of the reasons that I'm on McLaurin. And I tend to think that he is being drafted in the middle of his range of outcomes, but I just feel like this is a player that does have that high end wide receiver two upside as a potential intersect of high target share and, you know, efficient production from the best quarterback situation he's had. So we can move on to the next guy, because this is the next guy. I feel like everyone's clamoring to draft him. He's just skyrocketing up the boards. It's Rashad Bateman. The year two guy had a little bit of a delayed impact as a rookie for multiple reasons. A little bit of injury situation. We had some quarterback merry-go-round a little bit in Baltimore last season due to Lamar Jackson's health. And we see Hollywood Brown exit the picture with the massive trade in the NFL draft, sending him out to Arizona. And Bateman, I mean, he's in-house favorite to just, you know, gobble all of that up. And he's got even maybe more chain moving sensibility than Hollywood had. So it remains to be seen how he'll factor in versus Mark Andrews. It's a team probably that's still only going to support two pass catchers, but so much funnels through those guys. I'm really interested to see what you have for Bateman. He's also a pretty high exposure for me. I want to take a look at that real quick so I can keep track of how these projections are grading my exposure. So in Best Ball Mania, I do have 17% exposure. So about double the expected exposure to Bateman. So another player that's kind of sitting in my top 12 wide receiver exposure. So hit me with it. Good investment or bad investment?
Well,
If I go 0 for 2 in this thing, man.
Yeah, yeah. So here's the unfortunate thing. I'll phrase it like this. I personally, just before, you know, we hit upon it, I have been taking Bateman when I get Lamar Jackson. I've very rarely taken Rashad Bateman outside of having already drafted Lamar Jackson. Now, you look at the Baltimore offense. We know that it is going to be one of the teams that does skew more heavily towards the rush than the pass. I can't guarantee that things finish out like that, but I would highly suspect that we see them rushing more. The good news for pass catchers in Baltimore is that their overall play volume, I think, still ends up being over league average, which prevents them from being one of these teams that has, you know, like a troublingly low amount of passing volume. I kind of take that back, though, because they actually do come out, though, Curtis, as the second lowest passing volume team in my projections. On top of that, Mark Andrews, I have with a 27% target share. When you work through distributing out the rest of the offense, I think that you would still expect somebody like Devin Duvernay, who's probably going to be the wide receiver two, to get around 13%. The team's wide receiver three and wide receiver four should be somewhere around 8%. Just knowing how these things work out, J.K. Dobbins could get around 9%. This leaves Bateman with a target share of 20%, which I think that one could argue is way too low, but we will explore that. With a catch percentage of 65%, which is similar to where he would have been in the past, lower yards per reception around 12, and a 7% receiving touchdown percentage, he finishes as a wide receiver, as the wide receiver 44. Now, we've seen 1 year from Bateman. Last year did have a 68% catch rate. That was on 68 targets. I think that scales back a little bit with more targets. Had a receiving touchdown percentage of just 0.02, only one receiving touchdown last year, and 11 two-point yards per reception. As a result of that, minus the decrease in catch percentage, which I think is very justified, this is actually a fairly reasonable projection for him, getting him to 5 receiving touchdowns. I know that you like Bateman. Let's see what happens. Even if we get Rashad up to a target share of 24% and we hold those other variables constant, we're looking at a player that then gets up to 6 receiving touchdowns, 944 yards, and this would still put him in the range of, it's probably going to be wide receiver 33, which is better, but still not where I believe you would like for him to go. If I really juice these numbers, say he gets to a catch percentage of 66%, manages to elevate his yards per reception up to 12.5, and can eke out one more touchdown. So if I give him a receiving touchdown percentage at 0.08, which is a pretty solid percentage, I'm actually going to have to bump that up more. Let's see, if I put it at 0.09, I think that should get him to 7 receiving touchdowns. This would make him the wide receiver 29. Moral of the story here, Curtis, is I think there's a lot of work to do unless you see the Baltimore offense come out and pass a lot more than I would expect.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right. I want to push back a little bit.
Let's do it.
And see. Let's see if we can tweak this one. So in Hollywood, well, I think it really starts with this question.
Yep.
The question is Rashad Bateman going to be the runaway wide receiver one in Baltimore or not? That's really the discussion, because yep. if he is, and nobody else kind of infringes on that, and it's going to be the Bateman and Andrews show,
yep,
like it was the Brown and Andrews show, then I think that these projections are too conservative.
Okay.
So it really just comes down to, you know, is anybody going to bump in to Bateman? I think on the current roster, it's highly unlikely. Now, Baltimore has been linked periodically this offseason to Julio Jones. Yep. And so he's not there now. But if he were to be there, you know, I could certainly see, you know, Bateman maybe being down in that 20% range where you've got him. But if I look at all three seasons of Hollywood Brown with Jackson, which, you know, obviously overlaps with the Mark Andrews tenure as well. I mean, Marquise Brown's cumulative target share, and I'm using the NFL Stat Explorer. You can do some really cool stuff with our weekly Stat Explorer. His cumulative target share 2019 through 2021 was 24%. So that gets us to what was your high end. But if you remember, Marquise Brown's rookie season, people were pretty disappointed. Yep. with his involvement in the offense. If you look at the last two seasons, now he's up at 26% cumulative, and the icing on the cake being in 2021, 27%. So I do think there's a couple more percentage points we could eke out. Just also thinking about the types of players that they are, I would expect Bateman to have a higher catch percentage than Hollywood Brown based off of the type of targets that overlap with his skill set.
Yep.
The most. So I don't know how his ADOT or air yards per target and potentially the yak, how all of that would intersect with or overlap with what Hollywood was doing. But those would maybe be some things to take a look at. And if I look at the raw target volume, even, you know, in 2021, Marquise Brown was wide receiver 9 in targets as a function of that high team target percentage. So I would like to hear, for experimentation purposes, what happens if we push Bateman into that 26, 27% range, maybe bump up his catch rate just a little bit versus what we saw in prior years for the Baltimore wide receiver one.
Yep.
You know, anywhere from 3 to 5%, just as a function of a lower average depth of the target. And let's see what happens there.
Okay. So last year, 63%. Catch rate. I'm going to bump that up to 68. Yards per reception were at 11. They're at 12.5 currently. I had it lower than that. I'll tell you what, Curtis, I'll even bump it up to 13.
I don't think we need to do that. I don't think there's necessarily a case to do that. I mean,
okay.
Bateman did get 68 targets last season. Now they weren't all from Lamar Jackson, but you know, he had 11.2 yards per reception last year. I mean, I think leaving it in that 11 to 12 area, with maybe a slight efficiency bump in year two is appropriate, but we don't need to get nuts with it. He did have a 67% catch percentage last season.
Bateman. Well, I think, 68 is pretty high. 68 is pretty high. All right. For the purpose of this exercise, I'll jump it up to 0.7, that's not going to happen. All right. 0.7. So 70%. Now the key thing we have to really figure out though, is what the receiving.
Where was it before?
I don't even remember where I think I originally had it at 64%.
No, just give him what he had last year. Just give him 68.
Okay.
And you can leave his YPR in that range where you had it, in that 11.5 range. All
right. Receiving touchdown percentage is what we got to talk about.
Bump his target market share up to 26%, 27%.
I have it at 27. We might need to up the overall pass volume for the team, though.
We don't even need to see that yet.
All right, receiving touchdown percentage, though, right? Hollywood had a receiving touchdown percentage last year, 0.07. It was 12% the year before.
Bateman's college touchdown percentage was 12.9.
All right.
That's 147 receptions. So, I mean, I think that's reasonable to consider.
Yep.
Now, if we also want to consider, you know, what happened last year, you know, it gets a little bit, you know, dicier because, you know, he wasn't just with Jackson, but I think we can at least, you know, we've seen Lamar and his wide receiver one, whoever that be, produce a 13% before. So let's take it down a little bit just because obviously the NFL corners are a little tougher than the Big Ten corners. So let's just go. I don't know what you have it at now. Let's just go like at 11%.
Woof. All right. 11% is very, very high. I just want to point out to people.
Let's go 10%.
We're going to do it. All right. We'll do it.
I mean, Hollywood was already posting above those numbers. You know, we would expect the Baltimore offense to have some outlier type results because they funnel these looks to, you know, just a couple guys.
Yeah. All right. So, but 10 touchdowns for Rashad. All right. Well, that's what we're trying to do. So that's 10 touchdowns.
How many is Lamar going to throw? You know, I mean, how many is he going to throw?
That movement gets Lamar up to 30 passing touchdowns. As a proxy, last year, our boy threw, it was 12 games, he threw 16 touchdowns. He did get to 36 back in 2019.
36 and 19 and 26 and 20. Yep. I mean,
all right.
You know, last year was a busted year. He's hurt. Okay. And then he averaged 31 touchdowns the two seasons prior.
Okay. So all of this work pushes Bateman up to wide receiver 14, but I think that's a lot of work.
That's the upside.
That's all that's Curtis wants to see.
It's a lot of work and that gives, you know, Bateman like full credit for securing the type of, opportunity that Hollywood was able to earn.
Yeah.
And I mean, Hollywood Brown's proven to be a very good NFL wide receiver, but I think this does illustrate the upside for Bateman, and it's not getting irresponsible with any type of outputs that we haven't already seen in the Baltimore offense. What I don't like when I see projections that, you know, really kick multiple players in the offense forward on efficiency and, you know, massive changes in, you know, total play volume or pass run rate. Those are the types of things that get crazy. All we're doing in this exercise is basically saying Bateman gets Hollywood's forfeited role and then produces like Bateman has. We're not saying he's going to produce like Hollywood did.
Well,
so I think, you know, for a ceiling perspective,
yep.
You know, you can see how people would be excited about Bateman. Now he's being drafted at wide receiver 25. So after going through this exercise, I think, you know, like we did with McLaurin, we go back and we say, all right, where should the projection be? Are these good investments? And what say you, Dave Caven, master of all projections?
Yeah, no, I mean, I think Bateman is fine to be drafted at wide receiver 25. I think that's fine. I do think, though, from a projection perspective, it makes a lot more sense to keep him closer to where I have him. The final thing that I would say here is
Where'd you have him again? Tell me again.
Well, no, he ends up at wide receiver 44 with a 20% target share, which I think we could talk about the 20% being too low. But I think even if I put it at 23 okay. and I still have his numbers juiced a little bit over what they were last year, especially with that touchdown percentage.
Name your charity. If Rashad Bateman doesn't finish wide receiver 43 or higher, I will donate $500 to the charity of your choice.
I think he's going to finish wide receiver 43 or higher.
44
or higher. That's not what we're talking about, though. I think the ADP of 25 is in a reasonable range. I've now lost my train of thought where I was going with this.
That's all right.
But okay, no, this is what I was going to say, though. I do think that it's dangerous, though, when you start bringing players forward and you start putting them into what other players were able to capture in the context of the offense the year before. I think that this is more of a straightforward case, perhaps, than you have with other teams with the variables that are kind of shifting here. And we know more about what Baltimore likes to do and how they like to operate than some teams. But I would say this, my final thought here would be to people that if you're viewing Bateman as an entrenched wide receiver two in your mind as an entrenched wide receiver two, I don't think that that's something you should be doing. I think you need to realize that it's not guaranteed he's a wide receiver two.
Yeah, I think that's fair because I mean, things could bounce the wrong way for him in particular on touchdown rate.
Right.
And touchdown share within the offense as well.
Right. So with that volume,
I think that's totally fair. But okay. I mean, I just feel like, you know, this episode should go like 3 hours now. Cause I got to keep going down my list of exposures to find somebody that, our projections are supporting at this point. I think as a volume player right now.
Yep.
You know, these players in best ball excite me a lot. I can make the case for why they would jump forward in the context of their offense. McLaurin, you know, with the better quarterback, and you know, Bateman with the vacated opportunity and lack of other competition at the position. If we were doing a redraft league, I'm not sure that I would really want to take both of these players in rounds 4 or 5, you know, where you're typically getting them, but alternating between them, which is typically what I've been doing in the end of round 4 and through the middle of round 5, it feels perfectly fine. So I think what I'm really seeing here is that, you know, perhaps I need to be mixing in a little bit more Lamar Jackson if I really do think that Rashad Bateman is going to be, you know, 90% of Hollywood this year.
Right. So I'll leave you with this, Curtis. McLaurin and Bateman across my portfolio of 33 teams right now that are in the Puppy or Best Ball Mania 3, I have 9% exposure to both of those players. So,
guys, I mean, yeah, that's terrible. Expected exposure. It's expected exposure, right? It's like,
yep.
You know.
Yeah.
8-9%. So yeah. You're taking them, you know, when they're a value and you're not forcing them. Whereas for me, both of those guys have been, you know, targets. But I, you know, even just going back to last year, you know, this is no surprise to listeners, especially at the top of drafts. I mean, about half of the players that are available to me in either round typically don't find their way into my portfolio. I mean, in that top 50, I'm really only typically selecting, you know, 20 to 25 of those players. And these just happen to be two of the guys that make that cut. So this was really fun.
Yeah. I enjoyed this.
Dave grading my draft. So hopefully I can do better when we do tight ends later this week. I have some interesting names. Maybe we won't have to talk quite so long about it.
Right.
Because a lot of the guys that you end up exposed to at the tight end position typically are later in the draft and you're already kind of squinting at that point. So, Dave, I mean, tip of the cap to you. We talked a little bit about, you know, all of the work that goes into our projections at rotoviz.com and you being the brains behind that. Also, just want to shout out Blair for, you know, all the fine tooth combing that he does through that, just to serve as a cross check, Blair. Yep. Andrews, I mean, really keeping us honest in everything that we do. And I'm just going to continue to play the role of cheerleader because for all these players, because they all look good. They all look good to me. So we'll be back later this week with some tight ends.
Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Fantasy Football Show. Send us questions at rvffshow@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at DaveCabinFF and at CPatrickNFL. Leave us a voicemail at 978-615-9214. And make sure to rate, review, and subscribe.